This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
Right, well, the night sky in February, and actually it could be quite an interesting month. Let's start with the stars first, and as you look out towards the south after the sun has well set, you have that wonderful skyscape with Orion reasonably high in the south. The three stars of his belt point up towards the constellation of Taurus on their upper right. We'll come back to Taurus later on. Down to the lower left, you come to Sirius, the brightest star in our northern sky in Canis Major. The upper left-hand star of Orion is called Betelgeuse. It's a red supergiant, probably about the size of the orbit of Jupiter, something like that. And at the lower right, we have Rigel, which is a blue supergiant, about 50,000 times brighter than our sun. Well, I've talked about these before. Let's just work over towards the east a bit. It's a fairly blank part of the sky. The first constellation that one goes through is called Monoceros, and there's really nothing there you can see with your unaided eye. It has, however, a very nice nebula called the Rosette Nebula, which you can see pictures of. And also, I think it's the location of the nearest stellar mass black hole that we believe is about 3,500 light years away from our sun. It's called Monoceros X1, it's one of its other names, and it was discovered way back in about 1976, and we at Jodrell Bank, little team that I was in, we actually discovered its precise position. Further over from Monoceros, up a little bit, well, you have Procyon in Canis Minor, almost a single star, really, you see in that constellation. Up to the left of that is Cancer, and there's almost nothing to see there with your unaided eye, but binoculars show a very nice cluster called the Beehive Cluster, or Prisipi. Quite often the moon passes in front of the Beehive Cluster. It's a lovely thing to see when that happens. And you continue over in that direction, you come, of course, to Leo, and we're going to come to Leo a couple of times in the highlights this month, and also because Saturn is lying just below it. So that's the sky. What about the planets? Well, the most obvious planet to see in the early evening after sunset, and you cannot miss it, is Venus. I know one says you cannot miss things, but really, it is shining at about magnitude 4.5, very high up. It's probably one of its best apparitions at the moment that you ever get. As the month progresses, it actually gets a bit nearer to us. The amount of Venus that's illuminated actually is reduced, but the angular size gets bigger because it's getting nearer. The two effects tend to cancel out, and the brightness stays pretty much constant. So you can barely miss Venus. The other planet that's now coming into good view is, of course, Saturn. And it's actually lying below Leo, quite a bit below, but there is a funny bit of the constellation that sort of dips right down between two others, and that's where Saturn is at the moment. It's not as bright as it often is because the ring system is almost edge on. The angle's about 1 degree at the moment. It sort of wiggles about a bit during the year, and at some point later in this year, around September, the rings will be precisely edge on and they'll basically disappear. But still, very nice object to look at. So we've got Venus, we've got Saturn to see in the evening sky. Now all of the other planets have been sneaking around behind the sun, and they're just about becoming visible in the dawn. And I'll talk about them together in one of the highlights of the month, one of the toughest things I've ever suggested you might look out for, but it might be worth a try. So we'll come to Mars, Mercury and Jupiter all together in the highlight later on. So let's have a look at some of those highlights. And there are several quite nice things to see. Well, I said just a moment ago that the three planets, Mars, Jupiter, and Mercury, have all been hiding behind the sun, and they're coming around into the pre-dawn sky. They won't really be easily visible at all until the end of the month, but on February the 22nd, it might well be worth trying to have a look, because they're joined on their right by the moon. There'll be a lovely little lineup. On the upper right, we have the moon, then Mercury, then Jupiter, and then Mars. Now, the problem at the moment is this. The ecliptic, which is where we tend to see the planets, the path of the sun across the sky, is at a very shallow angle with the eastern horizon at dawn. And that means, although the planets are at some reasonable angle away from the sun, and they rise fairly well before the sun, by the time the sun rises, their elevation is only measured in sort of 7 to 10 degrees or so. So in order to see them, you've got to have a very good low eastern horizon, perhaps being up on a hill looking towards the east where it's lower down. Then you would have a chance of seeing them. Binoculars will certainly help. Obviously, you'll see the moon easily and probably Jupiter. But to see Mercury and Mars, which is the lower left of the four objects, you'll need binoculars. But I think it's worth a try. But let me just say, do not continue looking for them once the sun has risen. If your binoculars stray onto the sun, you could obviously hurt your eyes. Now, I mentioned Saturn was just below Leo. Well, around Feb the 23rd, any time, let's say, from the 22nd to the 24th, a Comet Lulin, is going to pass just below it. On the 23rd, it'll be 2 degrees below Saturn. So if you put a binocular field of view where Saturn is reasonably high up in the frame, in the field of view, you'll see Comet Lulin below at about magnitude 7. Now, binoculars, given a reasonably dark sky, will get you down to magnitude 8 or 9, so there shouldn't be any real problem. There's a fairly bright star just to the right of Saturn. It's called Sigma Leonis. Now, that should look starlight, pinpoint, whereas Comet Lulin will look like a little fuzzy ball and will be considerably fainter. And on one particular point of time, they'll make a very nice little triangle. So I think that's a well worthwhile thing to look for around February the 23rd. Find Saturn, that's easy, below Leo, and then just below it, moving below across, you should find Comet Lulin. Now, another nice thing to try with binoculars, also related to Leo. The largest of the minor planets is called Ceres. In fact, when it was first discovered, it was called a planet. Then it got demoted to a minor planet, and just a couple of years ago, it was sort of promoted again to be one of the dwarf planets. A dwarf planet is an object where it's got sufficient mass and size so that gravity makes it form a spherical shape. So Ceres, which is the largest and most massive of the minor planets, is now a dwarf planet. And it is basically moving upwards above the hindquarters of Leo. There's a star called Zosma, which is fairly obvious. It's the upper sort of left star of the body of Leo. And Ceres follows a path basically moving upwards through Leo from Zosma throughout the month. If you go into Google, put in night sky, you'll find the Jodrell Bank night sky page. And on there, you'll find, first of all, an overall chart of Leo to show you where Zosma is. And secondly, a detailed chart to show you where Ceres will be on roughly each of the days throughout the month. It's going to be again at magnitude about 6.9 to 7.2, so pretty much the same as Comet Lulin's likely to be, and you will therefore need binoculars. And a good thing to do is to have a look on hopefully a couple of nights or so and check that it's moved. So that would be rather nice. Spot, if you can, a dwarf planet. And finally, let's just say that after sunset, there's not really a better time at which to observe those two lovely open clusters in Taurus. The Hyades is the first one you come to if you move up to the right from the three stars of Orion. There's a very bright star called Aldebaran. It's actually an orange or red giant, but it's actually rather orangey, that looks as though it's part of the cluster, although it's a lot brighter. In fact, it isn't. It's about halfway between the Earth and the Hyades cluster, and whereas all the Hyades stars are moving in one direction towards the upper left of Orion, in fact, Aldebaran is moving from up to down. It's going sort of southwards. So that's a lovely thing to see in binoculars. And then up to the right, of course, you come to the wonderful Pleiades cluster. It's one of the youngest open clusters. It contains lots of bright blue stars. And the fact that we don't see any red giants in the cluster tells us that it can't be more than about 100 million years old. So it really is very young. With a telescope, you can sometimes make out the fact that the brighter stars have some nebulosity around them. It looks as though the cluster's moving through a dust cloud, and the dust particles are reflecting some of the blue light from these hot blue stars. And you can look on the web, and there are wonderful photographs of the Pleiades cluster. But it can look really good in a pair of reasonably high-power binoculars. I've managed to acquire a pair of 15 by 50 image-stabilized binoculars made by Canon. And if you lock them onto the Pleiades, it looks absolutely stunning. So two lovely open clusters to observe, the Hyades and the Pleiades clusters in Taurus. Well, what about the southern sky? Well, I've had the great joy of spending Christmas, in fact, in New Zealand. So I've had many opportunities to observe the wonderful part of the southern sky that basically contains the constellations of Vela and Carina going down to Crookes, the Southern Cross, and below that Centaurus. And that, at the present time, is rising very nicely after sunset. One of the brightest stars in that region, the most southerly, is in fact is called Alpha Centauri. It's one of the nearest stars to us. It's part of a triple system. A small little red dwarf star, part of the system, is the nearest at 4.2 light years away. It's called Proxima Centauri. Up to the left of that is a star called Beta Centauri. In fact, it's obviously, you'll see, it's fainter than Alpha Centauri, but in fact it's very much intrinsically brighter. It's about 100 times further away than Alpha Centauri. So to appear as bright as it does, it means it's fundamentally a very bright star. Now those are the pointers. If you follow those, you come up to Crookes, the Southern Cross. And if it is really dark and you can see the pattern of the Milky Way, you'll notice just below Crookes is a rather dark region. It's called the coal sack. It's a thick dust cloud, and that's fairly obvious. Now, as you move up along the Milky Way, you have a really beautiful region of the sky that goes up to Carina, and up there is, in fact, something called the False Cross. It's a rather larger cross, same sort of orientation. And when I was looking at that the other night, I actually spotted something I wasn't really expecting to see. If you just go up to the right of the right-hand star of the False Cross, you actually see a little fuzzy region. It is, in fact, a rather lovely open cluster called C96. It's in what's called the Caldwell catalogue, which Patrick Moore has made to add to the very well-known Messier catalogue. And, of course, it includes objects from the southern sky. And that's a very nice object in a small telescope, but you can pick it out quite nicely in binoculars. And then within the region below the False Cross, towards Crookes, the Southern Cross, you have the Carina Nebula, which is one of the brightest regions of the Milky Way. It's a fantastic region to observe in detail. It contains a star called Eta Carinae, which is probably the next star that's going to blow up any time soon near our Earth, and that will be truly spectacular, visible in broad daylight. There may well be a great burst of gamma rays ejected as or sent out as the star explodes, but they tend to be beamed, and happily for us, that beam does not look as though it includes the Earth, so it's probably safe to try and observe it over the next few years. But someday, that will certainly become a very impressive object. Now, while I was down there, I actually bought two books. I'd just like to mention them very briefly. One of them is by Richard Hall. It's called How to Gaze at the Southern Stars. It's a very nice book about someone who's based in South Island, New Zealand. And also, each year, the New Zealand astronomers produce the Astronomical Yearbook. And I bought the 2009 yearbook, and it contains some very nice star charts, what you see to the south and a description, and what you'll see to the north throughout the year. So I would commend that to you. It's $20, which doesn't sound too bad to me, for what is a beautifully produced book. So there we go. I'm looking forward to getting back to the southern hemisphere to see the sky there again. Well, I hope you have an enjoyable month's observing.